A first glance at these passages from Mark paint a pretty bleak picture for the future of the disciples. It would seem that their ability to choose a leader needs a little bit of work. When considering the needs of the 12, Jesus, their leader, comes across at best as aloof and uncaring. The 12 find themselves thrust upon a fast-paced schedule with little time to eat, sleep, or pay attention to their own needs. In Mark 6, 8, and 9, just a few verses before our text, Jesus ordered them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. 15 verses later, we find them busy, exhausted, and hungry. Oh, and don't forget, those 15 verses in between are an account of the horrific beheading of their beloved friend and Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, at the whim of a king's daughter. Our particular passage finds the 12, now called sent ones, or, if you're Jake and Elwood, the ones on a mission from God, they're finally about to receive some R&R. But instead of rest, the 12, Jesus turns his attention to the needs of the crowd, and the apostles must continue working on. If Jesus' neglect wasn't enough to frustrate them, he now tells the same ones he had commanded just a few verses earlier not to carry bread nor money and to feed the crowd. When the apostles finally come up with a small basket of fish and loaves, Jesus does something miraculous. He multiplies it to feed the crowd and has still unfed, exhausted disciples distribute the food and clean up the leftover mess. Immediately after, still with no rest, Jesus makes the disciples get in a boat and row to the opposite side of the lake, where he dismisses the crowd and spends some time in quiet prayer. It would seem that the disciples finally have an opportunity to relax in the boat. But instead, they fight against a strong wind that threatens their safety in the boat. If fulfilling the needs of the surrounding crowd wasn't exhausting enough, the 12 are now confronted with a personal struggle. Interestingly, Mark's use of time markers in the text is specific, and, depending on the translation, can easily be missed. Mark tells us that the disciples' boat leaves the shore before darkness sets in, and almost immediately, the storm picks up. The entire night passes before Jesus, in full knowledge and view of the struggling disciples, finally decides to do something. Somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., our translation said 4, Jesus walks out on the water to them. In Mark 4, a few chapters earlier, the disciples battled another storm at sea, and Jesus, who was with them in the boat, calmed the storm. Perhaps that's the intent of Jesus this time. But no. Jesus intends to pass them by. Really, pass them by. Jesus had commanded the already exhausted, newly commissioned apostles to get in a boat at the end of the day, row across the sea against the storm while he sat on dry land by himself all night long, watching them. And finally, when he decides to do something the next morning, his intent is not to calm the storm, nor to even get in the boat to lend a hand with an oar or two. Jesus intends to pass by them. You know, this passage reminds me of a conversation I had with Rick the director. Rick the director was one of those guys that didn't have a real last name, at least none that we know of. To us, Rick the director didn't need a real last name because that would remove his superhero-like status and turn him into a mere mortal, like the rest of us summer camp employees. To add to the mystique, Rick the director even had a superhero uniform and superhero transportation. Rick the director's uniform consisted of a blank t-shirt, cargo shorts, and old-school Reikley Yukon hiking boots with red laces. Rick the director's utility belt consisted of a Mountain Smith lumbar pack, which held hidden treasures and an original Leatherman multi-tool. His superhero vehicle was equipped with a bottomless first aid kit, fog-piercing headlights, and could zip around the camp with neurosurgeon-like precision. Some unknowing souls referred to his vehicle as a golf cart. But we knew differently. It was the Rickmobile. That summer, in 1996, at Oakhurst Christian Camp in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, I decided, for the first time, to tell someone about my call to vocational ministry. I thought perhaps he would see something of value in me, and I could become Rick's sidekick. But unfortunately, Rick's response crushed me. Granted, the pedestal I'd placed him on was completely unwarranted and unfair, but I was too young to understand that. I told Rick, the director, that God had called me to be a pastor, and 17 years later, I still remember his words. "Steve, if you can do anything other than be a pastor and still feel like you are fulfilling God's call on your life, do that other thing." I was still trying to pick my jaw up off the ground as the Rickmobile sped off. But today, I understand what he was telling me. Understatement of the year, ministry is tough work. The hours are long. Few people understand what it is we're really doing. Thank yous are few and far between, and the needs seem never ending. Not to mention the constant tension of caring for ourselves while caring for others. It's not so different from the job posting for the disastrous 1914 South Pole expedition that read, "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful." Now, I know that ministry-related struggles in this room are numerous and painful. This is my fourth trip to IWS, and each time I am here, I am profoundly impacted by the painful ministry-related stories of loss, frustration, and rejection told by both students and faculty alike. We are no strangers to struggle, and our common experience of struggle is what drew us as a class to this text. Just like the disciples, we know what it is to be exhausted by ministry, hungry for rest, and have God say, "I want you to care for these people." Just as Jesus and the 12 apostles experienced, the needs of the crowd are seldom convenient. Even then, once we've done our best to care for those with whom we serve, we're confronted with our own struggles. The 12 struggled against the wind and waves all night long. But what struggles do you face personally in the midst of ministry? What storm are you straining against? Maybe your storm is rejection, depression, anxiety. Maybe it's the loss of a loved one or a broken relationship. Maybe your storm is a burden you bear for a friend or a spouse. Maybe it's something that only those close to you know about, or maybe it's something you have hidden away deep inside for fear of shame. Maybe you bear the marks of a storm from the past, or you find yourself in the middle of the storm right now, straining to keep the boat afloat and your head above water. Whatever the storm may be, we can identify with the 12 apostles, whose once strong and calloused fishermen's hands had become tired and blistered from straining at the oars all night long. And when I'm honest, if we're honest, sometimes it feels like God has been watching from the safety of the shore the entire time, and now he's planning to walk right by us. Mark's gospel is beautiful because his writing style drives us deeper into the text. In Mark's account of Jesus feeding the 5,000, there were 12 baskets of leftovers. The apostles, whom Jesus had sent out with no bread, find that at the end of the day, once the crowd had been taken care of, there is a provision set aside. 12 baskets, one for each of the 12 apostles. Even with the masses of people around him wanting to be taught, even while he performs the miracle of filling the empty stomachs of thousands of people, Jesus is completely aware of the needs of the 12 and, with care, has made provision for them. Jesus provides for the 12 from the bounty of his miracle. And Mark not only calls us to pay closer attention to his own text, but also to the rich historical texts of God's story. 1 Kings 19 tells us of a once triumphant, now hungry and tired Elijah running for his life. Elijah's struggle is so intense that in order to find relief, he pleads for God to take his own life. 2 times God sends an angel to comfort Elijah, but it's not enough. Elijah travels alone for 40 days and 40 nights until he reaches the mountain of God where he hides in a cave. It's there, at Horeb, that God offers his comforting presence to the prophet Elijah and passes by. That sounds familiar. Is this the kind of passing by that Jesus intended to do for the 12 who were struggling in the boat? After all, Jesus, the Word, was with God from the beginning and was with God at Horeb. He passed by Elijah. That certainly changes things a bit. Jesus' intention to pass by the struggling apostles is not a sign of neglect. Jesus' intention to pass by is evidence of empathy from a magnificent and holy God. By using the phrase pass by, Mark is telling us that the compassionate God who comforted the prophet Elijah in his time of need at Horeb is the same God who steps into the storm and offers his presence as comfort to the 12 struggling apostles. If that's not enough to convince us that Mark is up to something, Jesus not only offers his comforting presence, but he speaks to the frightened 12 and says, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Now, as with other passages, some significance is lost in the translation from Greek to English. The Greek words translated, "it is I," is the first person present singular of the verb to be, ego, eimi. Say that with me, ego, eimi. Now, ego, eimi is the same verb just in Hebrew that was given to Moses at the burning bush. Moses, if you remember the story, is frightened and struggling with God's call to confront Pharaoh and lead the people out of Egypt. So God gives Moses the words, "I am," as an indication of the authority Moses now possesses. In verse 7 of this chapter 6 of Mark, Jesus gives the 12 authority to do miraculous things in his name. That's before they come across the storm and the needs of the crowd and their empty stomachs. But apparently, just a few verses later, they already need reminding. When the disciples are straining at the oars and frightened, Jesus' words are, "Take courage, I am. Don't be afraid." I think Mark is suggesting that while Jesus sat on the land watching the 12 struggling, while Jesus sat and watched the 12 to whom he had just given authority, while Jesus sat and watched the 12 who had recently been busy casting out demons and healing the sick, Jesus was filled with compassion. Jesus could recall a time when authority had been given to a frightened Moses. Jesus recalled the time he had passed by a scared and depressed Elijah to provide him some comfort. This passage is not a picture of a neglectful leader who has overlooked his disciples and overworked his disciples. This is a picture of a timeless and powerful God showing empathy to the needs of his forgetful people. A fairly common theme in Scripture, if I remember correctly. Friends, our earlier identification with the struggles of the 12 now carries a sting of humility. Sure, we identify with the struggles of the 12 and often find ourselves at the end of our rope. The pain and struggles we experience in life are no less real and are anything but insignificant. However, just like the 12, we are forgetful and need constant reminding of God's faithfulness. Just like the 12, we need constant reminding of the authority and the provision which God has already given us. In the midst of our struggles, we need to be told that the same God who spoke the words, "I am," giving powerful authority to Moses, the same God who spoke, "I am," to the 12, who thought they were powerless against the storm, is the same God whose power lives in us. The same God who passed by Elijah, giving him his divine comforting presence. The same God who walks through the storm to comfort their 12, the 12 in their time of fear and struggle, is the same God who gives his presence to us. In our time of need, both the presence and authority of God are with us. So, at the end of the day, when we are tired and we are hungry and are so overwhelmed by the hunger of those we serve that we forget to feed ourselves, we find that God has already set aside a portion for us. And when we are faced with our own personal struggles, we know that the great I am has drawn near to us. In response to God's presence, let's take this moment, right here, right now, to quiet ourselves, to rest, and to be still in the presence of the great I am.